Good day, listeners, and welcome to the Mailbox Rose Gallery. My name's Sean, and in just a moment, I'm going to be meeting up with my dear friend, partner in crime, and co-host, Birch. As you may recall, we're currently doing odd jobs, traveling around the country, really just trying to stay afloat while we're on the run from the law. And we've just been set up by what looks to be a great new job by my fixer and contact, Badminton Jones. We're going to be groundskeepers for the late Marlon Brando's estate. And oh, look, there's Birch, yeah, just as I'm coming around the corner. Hello, Birch.
Hey, right on time. You all right, Sean?
Here we are, Marlon Brando's place.
Marlon Brando's place. God, I'm such a fan. I've always wanted to come here and see it. I'll be honest, are you sure you've got the right place?
I'll just check the note. I mean, the handwriting's a bit shaky. Yeah, this is the right place, yeah.
I mean, it looks nice. It just seems a little bit more modest than I would have expected from a man who also owns his own island.
I do know what you mean, though, because he was quite a wealthy man, and I kind of expected his estate, his grounds, to be a bit more sprawling, a bit more opulent.
I mean, we're stood in front of the gate. I mean, maybe it'll look a lot nicer when we actually get inside. Have you got the key?
No, Badminton just said to let ourselves in, so we'll just go through the gate.
Well, I mean, I've been, like, pulling at the gate for, like, the past 10 minutes while I've been waiting here, just in case, and doesn't seem to open. I didn't spot any other way. Maybe we could just climb over?
Yeah, we'll just climb over. It'll be fine. I mean, we're meant to be here. It's not a problem. Yeah. All right, give me a boost.
Ready?
Yep. Right, now I'm on the other side of the gate. How are you going to get over? Hang on, are you still wearing those shoes that I gave you with the springs in them?
Yeah, I am. Why?
Have you tried jumping on them yet?
You know what? I actually haven't.
What did you think the springs were for?
You know, like in case something that I own that has a spring breaks, I can just like dig into my shoe and then use it for that. But no, I mean, that's what you suggested. Sounds like a much better idea. So hang on, I'll just go back a bit. The hop, a skip, a jump. Wow, that was amazing.
Wow, nice landing. Honestly, I'm very impressed. If that's your first time using those shoes.
It was. God, that must have been about 15 feet I made there.
Easily. You almost went over the house.
Yes. Well, we're here now. Oh, God. It actually looks worse than it did from outside.
I was expecting like a duck pond and maybe or like a small lake even. Sprawling lawns.
Yeah, I mean, look how overgrown this grass is. I mean, we've got our work cut out for us here.
For sure, mate. The memory of Marlon Brando deserves better than this.
Absolutely. We should cut the grass and we should put in that lake or duck pond that you were just suggesting.
I'll do the lake. You do the grass.
Sounds good to me.
Nice. Well, look, while we're digging around for the tools, why don't we just have a little chat about Marlon Brando? I mean, 6-decade career as an actor. Obviously, one of the most highly regarded actors of all times.
Yeah.
Plenty of awards to his name. He was one of the first actors to bring method acting to mainstream filmmaking.
Well, actually, Sean, I might have to correct you there because he actually had a bit of an issue with the term method acting. He sort of derided it and didn't consider himself to be a method actor, although it is something that is usually kind of attributed to him. When he did study acting in New York under the actress Stella Adler, he was taught the Stanislavski system, which is pretty similar to kind of like what you know as method acting, where actors explore both the internal and external aspects of their character.
Yeah, I mean, from my reading about it, it was trying to mentally put yourself in the state that you're trying to portray. So rather than just going, oh, I'm going to pretend to be angry now, you're going to get yourself really worked up. You're going to actually make yourself very angry. Possibly you're going to meditate on something in your past that really genuinely did make you angry. And the idea being that outwardly, rather than just showing yourself to be angry in a two-dimensional way, you'll have all these micro aggressions and kind of subconscious tics that you wouldn't otherwise be able to portray.
Yeah, I mean, like a couple of the things that he'd do, for instance, like if he had like an angry scene, is he'd go down to an ice cream shop, order like a nice cone, you know, a waffle cone, no rubbish, you know, 3 scoops, whipped cream, a flake, you know, all the works.
Wow, yeah.
And then he'd sort of purposely, when he left the shop, stumble out, drop the ice cream. It falls ice cream first onto the pavement, splat.
Oh, no.
And I mean, that's just going to send anyone in a rage. So as soon as he was like, oh, I wanted that fucking ice cream, then he'd run straight back to the studio. and record the scene.
And once he became more established as an actor, of course, they streamlined the process. So they just had an ice cream vendor waiting on set, who unfortunately often took a brunt of Brando's anger before they could kind of get the cameras rolling and get it on set. He will often have beaten an ice cream vendor to a pulp.
That's right, yeah. The amount of ice cream vendors that man went through, it's pretty incredible, really.
Just another one of the many achievements that Brando holds as an actor. And of course, that's probably why we're considering him a rogue for the Mailbox Rogues Gallery.
That's right, for his cruel mistreatment of ice cream salesmen. But he sort of had the acting bug at an early age. At one point, they lived, the whole family, they lived on a farm in Illinois.
Mm.
And he had a childhood friend there who said that Marlon Brando, as a kid, he liked mimicking anything and everything. So he'd like mimic kids. And he also said like that he'd mimic the cows and the horses on his farm.
That's very sweet. But I mean, how young are we talking? Because I think most toddlers will sort of, when they see a cow, they say moo. When they see a sheep, they say baa. Is this just somebody, some like news hound trying to get a scoop on Marlon Brando, to, like chasing up all these loose ends? Who haven't we interviewed about Marlon Brando yet? What about all the people who knew him when he was a toddler?
What do you remember about him? Well, not much. I was 2 years old at the time.
He did a cracking cow impression. Oh,
oh, you never heard a cow like it. Oh, my God. Oh. And I tell you what, right? One thing. When he'd put his hand to his mouth, he'd go, and it'd sound like a fart. Incredible.
Wow. Destined for greatness.
But I mean, I don't know, maybe, I mean, I heard that even at a young age, he was really, really going for it with these kind of like cow impersonations. Like he'd kind of get in the field amongst them and then like he'd have like a little audience of some of his friends and he'd start off and he'd kind of go, I could have been somebody. I could have been a heifer. I could have been a bull instead of a worthless cow, which is what I am. And then, of course, everyone would applaud. It's just like, I never knew there was so much nuance to a cow.
Yeah, you've got that on good authority, have you, that's what happened?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I read the unofficial, unauthorized biography of Marlon Brando. And, I mean, it's got official and authorized in the title. So, I mean, that's good enough for me.
Yeah, fair enough, fair enough. Well, obviously, I mean, that, to be honest, that does sound to me like the Stanislavski method all over that.
So he actually did pretty well in school, particularly in theatre, although he was held back a year for riding a motorcycle through the corridors of his school, which is pretty cool.
Rock and roll. What year are we talking?
That's the thing. This guy was rock and roll before rock and roll was even a thing. This would have been like the 30s and 40s.
He had a rock and roll personality. Well before rock and roll was an established thing.
Yeah, he was an individual for sure, and because he was an individual, he had to move to the beat of his own drum. So he couldn't stay on the farm in Illinois anymore. He'd kind of gone through all of the cows and horses on his farm. He's like, well, I can't really wring much more out of this. I need to kind of go to New York to study acting. So he did, as I mentioned, he studied the Stanislavski method. Just turned out to be like a real natural. Like he really took to acting really, really quickly. So it wasn't long before he was acting in the theatre.
Mm.
And definitely his biggest breakthrough came in 1947 when he was in the theatre production of A Streetcar Named Desire.
Yes, one of his famous roles, which of course he went on to play in the film.
That's right, yeah. Which earned him his first and certainly not last Oscar nomination for Best Actor.
Mm, for Stanley Kowalski, is it?
Yes.
You can tell we've done our research.
Oh, yeah. That classic character. Well, his character wasn't Stanley. It was, his character was Desire.
Oh.
He played the streetcar, didn't he?
I see, yeah. Well, the titular streetcar named Desire.
Yeah, well, I mean, It makes sense because he didn't get nominated for Best Supporting Actor. He was nominated for Best Actor, so he would have been the lead in the film. The film's called A Streetcar Named Desire. So, I mean, that must be what it was.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Yeah, yeah. It's been a while since I've seen it.
Oh, yeah. Real precursor to Brum, A Streetcar Named Desire.
Well, you're going in deep with the references there to Brum.
Everyone remembers Brum.
The sentient a car. I mean, I don't know if you know if you can call Brum a car. It was so tiny. It was like a little wagon.
It was a little car.
A little tiny car.
And he'd drive around and get into all sorts of mishaps and japes. And that's exactly what happened in A Streetcar Named Desire. The stage show of it was particularly impressive because, of course, they couldn't really do any special effects or anything. It was all makeup to make Marlon Brando look like a car. A streetcar at that.
Yeah, well, transformative, you could call that makeup. And he'd be up there on the stage going, clang, 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 I'm a streetcar.
Fill me full of petrol, you swine. That kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, like going back to the Stanislavski method, you know, he really got into the car. I mean, he literally got into a car and then he was like, yeah, like felt around the upholstery, the wheels, like, I think I could do this.
We'll always remember him as that streetcar.
Oh, yeah. Whenever I see Brum, which is very often,
you know, yeah.
Or Herbie the car, or any of those, you know, I'll always kind of, I enjoy them, but I always think you gotta pay tribute to those who paved the way for you, which is definitely Marlon Brando as Desire the streetcar.
Beautiful. Now, Birch, I know I said I was going to get started on digging this duck pond. I thought I'd try my hand at a bit of topiary first.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, you know, topiary, you know, cutting hedges into the shapes of objects.
Oh, right. Oh, I thought that was the pudding.
Tapioca?
Oh, silly me. I always get those two confused.
Right. I mean, I don't know what you thought I was doing there with these garden shears.
Well, I was getting, when you said you were doing that, I'll be honest, my stomach started rumbling. I'm a bit disappointed now, but no, go on, show me your topiary.
What I wanted to do was pay tribute to Brando.
Oh, yeah.
So I've kind of done a few pieces that reflect his greatest, his most iconic roles. So, of course, he's famous for another early performance from the 50s, On the Waterfront.
Oh, amazing film.
A great film and a great performance by Brando.
Yeah.
Now, he's a boxer in that film. And, you know, that kind of really highlights his masculine presence, his sense of manhood. But also, if you remember from the film, he keeps pigeons, which kind of highlights his sensitive side.
Yeah.
And so I wasn't sure with the topiary, am I going to do a boxing glove? Am I going to do a pigeon? So as you see, I've done a pigeon with a boxing glove.
That looks amazing, Sean.
Yeah, and I think you'll agree, there's nobody that wouldn't see that and immediately think of Marlon Brando.
What a fitting tribute to the man.
Thank you, thank you. This next one, The Wild One, an iconic look for Marlon Brando.
Yeah.
Dressed all in leather, little cap on a motorbike. You know, a defining image of the era. It's kind of set the blueprint for a lot of like rock and roll, biker gang fashion and look. So I've managed to cut a working motorbike.
A working motorbike? Wow.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't so easy just with garden shears to cut this hedge into that, the shape of a working motorbike. But do you want to just try it?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'll just try the throttle. God, that runs like a dream.
Thank you. Thank you. I don't know if I'd say artist, but...
you might not. I would.
Now, this last one. This one represents maybe the crowning achievement of Brando's career. Now, we've all seen the opening scene of The Godfather.
Yeah.
We're, of course, introduced to Don Corleone. He sat there in his tuxedo. It's shot in this, like, dark office room. He sat there behind a desk stroking a cat, and he's exerting his power and influence over this man who's come to see him.
Yeah, on the day of his daughter's wedding, no less.
On the day of his daughter's wedding. So, what better shape to cut into this hedge than the desk that he was sat behind in that scene?
You know, when I saw the desk, I thought, God, that looks familiar. I've seen this desk before, but yeah, now that you pointed it out, that is the desk from The Godfather. Wow.
There you go. Do you want me to go sit behind it and I'll pretend to stroke a cat and we can act out the whole thing?
Oh, yeah, let's do it. Yeah, yeah, I'll be that guy, yeah. Don Corleone, I need your help.
You come to me on the day of my daughter's wedding? Fuck off.
Oh, is that today? I thought you said it was Tuesday.
It is Tuesday.
Oh, shit. this accent is disappearing. I get so messed up with my days. I am so sorry. Hang on a minute. Where was my invite?
Well, first of all, your accent. Have you heard my impression?
Oish.
That's my topiary.
Beautiful. I love all three of them.
I'm glad to hear it. I'm glad to hear it again. I just felt there wasn't enough of a tribute to him in this garden.
Well, there certainly is now. And I mean, there's so much more that we can do. I mean, that's just the tip of the iceberg. You've got the topiary. We got the grass to cut, certainly. We've got some kind of lake or pond that we can put there. And I think I heard like some horses out back somewhere. So I'm sure we could build some kind of paddock for them as well.
All right, well, I'll get started on the duck pond. Before I was doing the topiary, I actually had a few practice digs.
Ah.
Problem was, right, I was digging all these holes and I kept hitting the gas main. And I've kind of cut right through it a few times with the shovel. So if you start to feel a bit woozy, you know, just stay away from the holes.
That's good to know. Thank you.
It's a bit difficult to avoid them because there are about 50 of them all over the ground now. And they're not so easy to see because of the long grass. So just try not to fall in any of the holes.
Right, okay. It might be a bit bumpy on this ride-on lawnmower when I start cutting the grass, but, I'm sure I'll be fine.
Yeah, just try and go around them. This hole's a difficult. I don't know why I volunteered to do this, and Birch gets to fanny around on a sit-on lawnmower. Oh, this is hard work. Oh, one of the horses is coming over. No, go away. Slow down, there's too many holes here. You'll break a leg. Stop. 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 Oh, shit. I think it's broken its leg or something. Oh, fuck, right. God, I don't know what to do about this. Right, I better go get Birch. He's a trained horse surgeon. Right, where is he? Birch? Birch? Oh, there he is. Yeah, on the lawnmower. Birch, over here. Yeah, he's coming now, listeners. He's going a bit fast, though. Birch, slow down.
Hey, hi, Sean, look at me. I'm on a lawnmower.
No, look, I'm waving, but he's just waving back. No, I'm pointing at the horse. Look at the horse.
What? I can't hear you. What are you saying? This lawnmower's very loud.
Slow down.
Sean, I can't for the life of me hear... Whoa.
Oh, fuck.
What was that? Let me just turn this engine off. Oh my god, I've just ran over a horse!
Oh, for fuck's sake, mate. I was telling you to slow down.
I didn't hear you, did I? You've heard how loud this engine is. Oh, what the hell's a horse doing lying in the grass like that?
It fell into one of my holes and was injured, and I was trying to get you to come and save it, not run it over.
You've seen how high this grass is. I didn't see the horse.
How's it looking? Look, you're a trained horse surgeon. What do you reckon? Can we save it?
I don't know. Let's have a look at it. Right. Just checking its eyes, its mouth, its teeth. Right. Well, the fact that I'm holding it by its head and its body is still on the floor makes me think that the thing's probably dead.
They usually don't come apart, do they? I mean, again, I'm no trained horse surgeon, but they don't, do they?
You're quite right. Horses don't come apart like that. We've literally decapitated a horse with a ride-on lawnmower.
Well, look, there's no we about it, right? I may have broken its legs with a hole that I dug that it fell into. You cut its head off.
All right. Okay, fine. Yeah, fine. The point is, what are we going to do?
Well, I would just say this is no tribute to Marlon Brando.
No, I can't think of any scene in any of his films that could even like equate to this.
No, and also we're going to get in a lot of trouble and we're trying to keep our heads down.
Well, yeah, exactly. So we've got to hide this head somewhere.
Right, how about, okay. Look, I'm going to dig... I was digging this hole anyway for the duck pond.
Hmm.
Why don't we just turn it into a horse grave?
Yeah, that's a good idea. I like that.
Bury the evidence, and then we'll do another one for the duck pond. Right, but in the meantime, any of the neighbours might look in, so we'll just hide it in the house for now.
Yeah, no, that's a good idea. If any of his relatives come by to check on how we're doing, they're going to see this dead horse on the grass. Where could we hide it? Tell you what, we could hide it in his bedroom. I mean, Marlon Brando's dead, so he's not going to be using it.
Yeah. It makes sense, really, doesn't it? I mean, it's the only place, really, that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, somebody might use the toilet. They might go in the kitchen and have a look. They might sit in the living room. No one's going to go in a dead man's bedroom. So I say we hide the horse's head in the bed. No one will be any the wiser. Well, that's the horse's head gotten rid of. Let's check on Sean. I'm in the garden now. Let's check on this hole. Oh my god, Sean, what the hell are you doing?
Pardon?
I said, what the hell are you doing down there?
I can't hear you. Come down. I've got something to tell you.
Yeah, okay, hang on. Jesus Christ. How many feet down has he dug? Right, okay, I'm down. What is it you wanted?
Oh, I just wanted to let you know I'm stuck.
Right, okay. You're stuck?
Yeah, have you seen how deep I've dug us?
Why did you wait for me to get down here before telling me you were stuck?
Well, you couldn't hear me before. I couldn't hear you.
Yeah, but now we're both stuck, aren't we?
That is true, yes. That is... okay, I can see why you're upset, all right? I didn't... Yes, I'm sorry.
Oh my God, how are we going to get out of this mess?
I don't know, but it's a good opportunity for us to talk a bit more about Marlon Brando, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so. Not got much else going on. I suppose while we're doing that, we could try and figure out a way out of here.
You talk about Marlon Brando. I usually phase out while you're talking anyway, so I'll start thinking about how we can get out.
Okay, sure thing. Well, so as we've said, the 50s were really a huge turning point for Marlon Brando. You know, you've got Streetcar Named Desire, Viva Zapata, Julius Caesar, The Wild One, and of course, On the Waterfront. Each one of those, he was kind of like acclaimed, getting nominations, and he was quickly being lauded as one of the greatest actors of all time. But there was a bit of a decline in his career in the 60s. He was kind of like taking roles more for like financial ends, like which is also when he ended up buying his own island.
Yeah, he'd done some filming in Tahiti and kind of fell in love with the place and bought his own atoll, didn't he? And I think in the 60s, it was like you say, they were not just critical flops, but commercial flops as well. So it was like a really fallow period in his career. Like he was working, but it was you couldn't really call it success.
No, absolutely. It wasn't until The Godfather came along in the early 70s that his career really had a real shot in the arm.
Yeah, and people like of our generation look back on that and think, God, he was already so old by the 70s. But actually, like he was wearing so much makeup to play Don Corleone. They aged him quite considerably for that role.
Yep, and also famously, cotton wool in the mouth, up in the cheeks.
So actually, the way that came about is when he went for his audition, he'd actually just come from the dentist. And you know, sometimes dental assistants put some cotton wool in your mouth to stop the saliva basically dripping, rolling down the side of your face and making you look like a complete buffoon. Mm. He had the cotton wool in his mouth from that, and his face was quite numbed from the procedure. And his agent was like, Marlon, what are you doing? You can't, you've had emergency dental surgery. You can't go in for this role. And he was like, no, I gotta do it. And, you know, he went in for the audition and they loved him. He killed it. Unfortunately, though, what it did mean was for every day of shooting, he did have to have emergency dental surgery before all of his takes.
That's true. I mean, that's just part of the method that he used to employ. He was very dedicated to the craft of acting.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it really shows in it.
I mean, he had over 100 fillings.
Yeah. Just while doing The Godfather. Yeah. Sometimes they just take a tooth out and then the next day they put it back in again.
But you know, he got the Oscar for it, so that's what's important.
Now, was that his first Oscar, or had he won one already for Julius Caesar?
No, he'd won for On the Waterfront, which didn't involve any invasive dental surgery, and his second one was for the Godfather. So two Best Actor awards.
And I think his third Best Actor award was for The Island of Dr. Moreau.
Absolutely. His most acclaimed role, quite possibly, isn't it?
Yes, yes. That was the film where they were filming it in Australia, and it was so hot that he insisted on one of his scenes. He did it with an ice bucket on his head, and they just sort of dressed it up to look slightly like a hat, but it was indeed just an ice bucket. Filled with ice.
It's almost like one of those exotic hats you see which has like the fruit and everything on it, but this was just like a mountain of ice on its head.
I can't remember. In the film, did they try and make it look like a hat? Or did they just in the film he played quite an eccentric character, really, Dr. Moreau.
Yeah, well, I mean, like taking after his own self, I guess. And like also by this point, you know, you look at pictures of him in like the 50s and he's like a very beautiful man. By this point, the guy was like, well, older, of course, that comes to us all. But he was also like 300 pounds.
I think he was supposed to have had an eating disorder. He would basically, for his whole life, he would eat like sweets and donuts and whatever he wanted, he would kind of eat constantly. But when he was a younger man, he'd burn off all those calories and he was working out and he was turning it into muscle. But as he got older, that fell away, but the appetite didn't. And he basically just became quite obese.
One thing I like is, certainly one of my favorite films of his would be Apocalypse Now. And like when you look at the making of that film, it was just like full of issues and problems like constantly. And one of the issues was that Marlon Brando had agreed with Francis Ford Coppola, the director, that he was going to be in the film. But at a point, it was like it looked as though he was never going to turn up. He wasn't going to arrive. He wasn't answering him. And then just randomly, he turned up 50 or 60 pounds overweight. He'd completely shaved his head. I mean, like he wasn't meant to look like that in the film, like the kind of strange Colonel Kurtz character. He wasn't meant to be like a fat, bald man. He was meant to look like normal Marlon Brando.
I did not know that.
Just rocked up on set. I mean, like, you look at him in that film and then, like, compare him. I mean, of course, he's got, like, a striking features on his face anyway, but it's like the Michelin man just kind of turned up.
It was a look for him, definitely. It was definitely a look. You know what? His whole career, full of iconic looks, from The Wild One to Apocalypse Now.
To the island of Dr. Moreau with the beautiful ice sculpture hat.
Yeah. His crowning achievement. Absolutely. Now, Birch, while you were telling me a load of shite about Marlon Brando, I actually got to thinking about how we could get out of this mess. Do you remember that weekend I spent in a Tibetan mountain retreat? You know, it was very mysterious. I'd never tell you what I went there to do.
Yeah, I absolutely do remember. Are you going to divulge the secrets of your sojourn to me now?
Where's me now? Is that Tibet? Oh, to me now. That's staying in, okay? Well, anyway, yes, it is time for me to finally reveal the secrets of what I learned. What I went there to learn from the aged mountaintop Tibetan monks was the art of molomancy.
Molomancy?
Molomancy, which is, of course, communicating and the control of moles.
Oh my God, that's incredible. So you can actually speak to and control moles?
Yes. To be honest, I've never had cause to use it, so I've not actually practiced much, but I know all the theory.
If you've not used it, why did you go all the way over there? You were there quite a while.
Yeah, well, it took me about 3 weeks to get there, and then it was, as I said, a weekend retreat. I mean, by the time I rocked up on like the Saturday morning, it was kind of like a, and then we had, you know, like morning tea, and then we broke for lunch after the introduction. So it was like a day and a half's worth of that, and then 3 weeks to get back.
Right, okay.
So it was like a 6 week round trip. I mean, you know, I just had a feeling that I need this knowledge someday.
Okay, well, I mean, if it gets us out of this hole, then it's certainly proved itself useful.
Shall I give it a go?
Please do. Let's talk with some moles.
Okay, well, it would be best to get me in the kind of meditative mind state. If you could just do some like kind of chanting or humming, like a kind of kind of thing. If you do that in the background, and then I can start communicating with the moles.
Yeah, okay, sure.
Throat singing, if you can do it. I don't know.
Throat singing? Isn't all singing throat singing?
I suppose now that you mention it, yeah, I suppose it is.
Right, so what, just sing any song?
Well, yeah, I guess so. Whatever you fancy.
Oh, okay, what's the first thing that comes to my mind? Got it. Okay, you ready?
I'm ready, yeah.
Uptown girl, she's been living in her uptown world.
Moles.
I bet she's never had a backstreet.
Come to me,
guy.
Moles.
I bet her
it is
mother
I,
never told
your leader.
Why.
I call you. Come to me, Moles. Moles?
She's been living in her
Moles, where are you?
As long as anyone
come on,
with hot
this isn't funny.
Can.
Moles.
And now she's looking for a
I know you're there.
Man.
Oh, I'm getting angry now, okay?
And when
Moles.
She knows what she wants.
All right, here they are.
From her
Birch. No, Birch, you can stop singing now.
I was just getting into the fucking chorus and now you're stopping me.
I know, but listen, the moles are coming. Can you hear them?
Yeah, oh, I almost don't care about the moles now, but yeah, all right, yeah, I can hear them.
Oh, sorry, I didn't realise you were enjoying singing Uptown Girl so much.
I I like Uptown Girl.
Apparently so. Apparently so. But, you know, do you think we've got more pressing matters at hand? A legion of moles are coming here to help us. At least show some gratitude. And
me show some gratitude? What, didn't you hear how I was really getting into it at the end there?
Yeah, you were. You did sound pretty good. I mean, have you ever thought about karaoke?
You know what? I think I've got a taste for it. You know, after all this, once we've finished our shift here today, we'll find some kind of pub and do some.
Yeah. Well, let's do it. Let's paint the town red, sing some Uptown Girls.
Yeah. Couple of downtown guys singing Uptown Girl. I like it.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, anyway, here are the moles.
Oh, hello, moles.
Yeah, well, thanks for finally turning up. I'm quite a powerful molomancer, so I kind of expected you to be here a bit quicker.
What did they say?
You don't want to know, mate. They are not happy about this. Apparently, they were just in the middle of... I don't want to mention exactly what they were just up to, but let's just say we interrupted them.
Well, you were a bit rude to them as well just a second ago, I must say.
Birch, this is Molomancy 101. There's a certain tone you've got to take with them. They don't respect people who can't get rough with them.
Are you telling me that you're negging moles?
Yes, in a way, I am negging the moles. It's all part of the molomancy.
All right, yeah, I'm not going to butt in. Go on, continue.
I learn it all from this book called The Game.
That's about moles, is it?
Yeah, well, I think so. It was written by these Tibetan monks, as far as I'm aware.
All right, far be it for me to poo-poo the wisdom of these Tibetan monks. You carry on.
Look, moles, get us out of here, would you? You could do with the exercise. All right, they've agreed to do it somewhat reluctantly. So,
nice.
Away we go. Well, didn't I tell you that my molomancy would get us out of that hole?
You did? We're out of the hole. They've dug an even bigger hole up through the ground, and now we're free, and they're off to live their mole lives. I think you've probably given them a bit of a complex after some of the rude things that you said to them while they were digging. They didn't need to hear about their thighs jiggling while they were digging away.
All part of the process, my friend. All part of the process. And they really were. I mean, I know I didn't say this to them because I was negging them, but they really were quite beautiful, weren't they? They really are like land dolphins.
Yes, yeah, dolphins of the land, definitely.
Hello? Are you the men from the gas board?
Oh my god, who the hell's that?
Yeah, we're from the gas board.
Yeah, that board of gas, that's us.
Oh, you'll be looking for me then, will you?
Just to confirm, you know, your name is?
Well, I'm the homeowner, yes, I'm Marlene Brandon.
Sorry, it sounded like you just said that you were the homeowner, Marlene Brandon?
Yes, that's right.
Well, yeah, but this is...
I feel there's a chance we're at the wrong house, Birch.
Yeah, that all makes sense now. Like we said at the beginning, it seemed like a modest home. You know, it doesn't seem like the sort of place that an A-list star would live. And plus, it's in rural Lancashire.
Hey, what's that, dearie? Have you seen my horse? Hey, what? Have you been digging holes?
Oh, good. Yeah, as well as...
Look, I can't chat long. I've got a wedding to get to.
Yeah, no, I mean, as we've already established, we're the gas board. So, unfortunately, we've had to dig these holes because we believe that there's been a gas leak somewhere in one of the pipes. So we were just trying to find the leak.
Okay, well, I'll leave you to it. I've got a wedding to get to. I'm just going to go up to my bedroom and get changed.
Yeah, not to worry, love. You go up to your bedroom, get changed. We'll get it all sorted while you're up there.
All right, bye.
Bye. Bye, Marlene.
Ooh, that's shit. We're in the wrong place. And, well, maybe we can just... Oh, wait, shit. Where did she say she was going?
Her bedroom.
Mate, isn't that where you put the horse?
Oh, fuck.
We better get out of here, mate. We better get out of here.
Oh, you two. What the hell have you been playing at?
Oh, fuck. Here she comes. Do you think she's seen the horse?
Well, her hands are covered in blood, so I'm going to assume so.
Listen, you two. You come to me on the day of my daughter's wedding. You dig a fuckload of holes in my garden, kill my horse and fuck up my hedges. That horse was due to race in the Derby next week. I could have been a contender. Stella! My horse's name was Stella.
Marlene, look, I'm going to level with you now, okay? Look, God's honest truth, we thought you were Marlon Brando.
So, you came to what you thought was Marlon Brando's house to ruin his garden and kill his horse?
But no, I mean, that was all incidental. I mean, we didn't mean to kill your horse. It tripped over one of the holes, and then I decapitated it with a ride-on lawnmower. I mean, it could happen to anyone.
It's the sort of thing that happens to us all the time, to be honest, Marlene.
Yeah. Oh, God, you should. In fact, do you listen to podcasts, Marlene? We've got this show that we do, right, called the Mailbox Rogues Gallery, right? It's this fortnightly podcast, right, where every fortnight we take a figure from history and we pop them in this metaphorical mailbox of rogues, right? And we get up to all sorts of japes and capers. Is that something that would interest you, Marlene?
I'm calling the police.
Oh, God. Okay. We've done checking the gas. It looks like there isn't a leak. Bye.
So there you have it, listeners. That is our episode about Marlon Brando. I feel like I learned a lot. I certainly learned a lot from you, Birch. Did you learn anything from me about Marlon Brando?
I did, yeah. I learned a lot about Marlon Brando and also about Marlene Brandon as well.
Yeah, that's a cock-up we may not live down. I don't know what I'm going to say to Badminton Jones.
I was going to say, this Badminton Jones... I mean, I appreciate the effort. I really did. I thought it was too good to be true. Like, being a groundskeeper for Marlon Brando's estate. And then this happens. I think... Yeah, he should get a bit of a bollocking for this one, I think.
Well, somehow I feel like he's going to spin it round and blame it on us.
What?
I mean, she did have a point. Even if we thought we were at Marlon Brando's house, we did fuck the place up a bit.
I mean, to make an omelette, you got to break a few eggs. I mean, if she'd left us there on the payroll, you know, for a few more weeks, that place would have been gorgeous.
Well, that's true. It was only day one.
And it was, remember, Sean, it was a tip to begin with.
Yeah, yeah.
The grass was about a foot and a half high.
Yeah, yeah. Well, listeners, thank you for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed that episode. I hope you learned a lot as much as we did. You can, of course, catch us online on all the socials, Twitter at Mailbox Rogues and Facebook, Instagram and TikTok. You can get us at Mailbox Rogues Gallery. We've also got an email, haven't we, Birch?
Yes, we do. mailboxroguesgallery@gmail.com. Perhaps you want to tell us if you enjoy the podcast, maybe some suggestions of people you'd like to hear us discuss. Send us an email or a message on any of our social medias.
And you can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, and you can also listen to us on a whole host of platforms, Spotify, YouTube, Stitcher, wherever.
Yep, anywhere that you get your podcasts from. Sorry, I think there's someone in the bottom of my shoe.
What? Well, it's not those springs, is it?
Yeah, I think it is, yeah.
Well, we could have used those to get out of the hole.
Oh, yeah, I didn't think of that. Well, we're out now. It doesn't matter.
Oh, well. I mean, look, I got a chance to show off my Molomancy. I had spent £10,000 on that trip, so good to get some use out of it, I suppose.
Yep, absolutely. That trip certainly proved its value.
Actually, that puts me in mind of something. I feel like we've had it pretty rough recently. Why don't me and you take a trip? Bit of a holiday.
Oh, you know what, Sean? You've read my mind. I mean, just from all the stuff that we've been through recently and also talking about Marlon Brando's tropical paradise island, it's just, I'm really, really jonesing for a holiday somewhere.
Okay, well, actually, Badminton Jones, he'd got in touch as well to say that we could make use of this castle. We can just go out there anytime we want, basically.
Oh my God, that sounds amazing. Wait, hang on a sec. This is an actual proper castle and everything, isn't it? It's all above board.
Yeah, yeah, it's a proper castle in Transylvania.
Transylvania? Can't say I've ever heard of that. Is that in the Med?
It's Med adjacent.
Med adjacent. I mean, so long as I can, you know, go for a swim, then I'll be happy.
I'm sure you can.
Well, okay, I'll take Badminton Jones's word for it one more time. Holiday sounds nice.
Fantastic. Well, I think that's us sorted for next episode then.
Yep, sounds good. Next time you hear us, we'll be holidaying in Transylvania. Who knows? Maybe we'll talk about some larger-than-life character whilst we're there as well.
Well, I can't think of any. None spring to mind at the moment, but we'll see what happens while we're there.
Yep, sounds good.
All right, well, I've been Sean.
I've been Birch.
Goodbye.
Toodles.